Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word, because as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo, because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, And the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change comes to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
Shit, dude. She just hit you in your face. Shit, dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She's like you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't. That nigga hurting himself.
You from Nuke State.
It's over. What I say it's over. Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man,
let's go across the street. I ain't caught it. I'll slap the fuck out of one of y'all.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negroes just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield? See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is, and it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Okay. Hold it. Let me. Oh, wait a minute. Okay. Today's podcast, kind of a manic Monday. Anyway, Biblical Presidential and Solar Decathlon Lifestyles 2022. Once again, Biblical Presidential and Solar Decathlon Lifestyles. What's this all about? Okay. And actually, what I have written in the program is Biblical Presidential 102 and Solar Decathlon Lifestyles 2022. And that's sort of a discombobulated title, so let me explain. Matter of fact, let me read it another way. Biblical Lifestyles, Presidential Lifestyles, and Solar Decathlon Lifestyles. All right, well, what does all that mean? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at the common denominator between biblical lifestyles, particularly the old and without getting religious and all this other stuff. Biblical lifestyles, we're just going to look at lifestyles. We're going to compare, we're going to look at the common denominator between them and the colonial and post-colonial presidents of the United States. We're going to take a look at the first 102 years of the presidents of the United States. And we're going to take a look at the lifestyles of the, which several global events now. I remember when it was just one event. And Solar Decathlon, and I volunteered for that thing like three times. I learned a whole lot from it. Matter of fact, what I'm doing now is I'm sort of modeling that. But we're going to take the common denominators between those three going into what, and actually what we're doing now, and as we are getting our momentum going now for 2022. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, hello, everyone. It's me, Arden Lee. I'm back today with another video. And today's video is about what do you do when you're trying to be someone's friend and they're being really self-destructive. They're clearly caught in a lot of pain. And they don't appear to actually want help getting better. They appear to be ruled by a lot of emotionality and expecting the rest of the world to make their life better for them. This is another question that was brought up by one of the members of the Repatterning Parlor, which is the Facebook group that I moderate for people who are interested in learning more about repatterning. And they gave some specific details, in terms of, this person making a lot of long Facebook rants about how they don't have a...
You know what? My board is running slow. So let me, I couldn't get to the audio that I wanted to play, so let me go into this. All right, today we're talking about presidential life, biblical lifestyle. What we're looking at is the common denominator between biblical lifestyles, colonial and post-colonial presidential lifestyles here in the United States, and Solar Decathlon lifestyles, and I'll go more into that later here. Now, if we look at the common denominator here is, just let me cut to the chase. Off the grid, particularly when it comes to electricity and water. I mean, you can even throw in heat. George Washington And let's start with presidential, and then we'll go back, because I know if I bring up the biblical, you know, that was 2,000 years ago. That was 5,000 years ago. So let's go from that angle. George Washington came into power as president of the United States on April 30th, 1789. The White House didn't get electricity until 1891. All right. The first president of the United States to experience electricity within the White House was President Benjamin Harris. And White House was electrified in 1892. So from 1789, George Washington, to 1891, President Benjamin Harris, that was 102 years that the White House did not have any electricity. Benjamin Harris was the 22nd president of the United States. So there were 21 presidents of the United States, often touted as the greatest country on the planet, or the most powerful, even back then, 102 years, no electricity. If we go back a little bit further, from the time that July 4th, 1776, to 1891, we're talking about 115 years, if I'm correct, that we did not have any electric running in the United States, and this country got along just fine without it. Now, if we go back to Ponce de Leon, the first European, or at least first European to be given credit for setting foot on what we now call the United States. We're not going to go through his history. But the first time that they had a European settlement here in the United States, and we're going to take that to 1521. So between 1521 and 1891, that's 370 years without electricity. I'm going to link this back to biblical lifestyles because the common denominator, we're going back 2,000 years, 5,000 years, man, civilization, got along just fine without electricity, and their lifestyle was, a lot of it was nomadic. Some of it was, you know, more settlement style, but a lot of it was nomadic, but they weren't under the oppressive, banks didn't have their way like they used to today, and neither did local and state or federal governments. But now I'm going to link it to where we are right now in 2021 and 2022 coming up. Okay. When I was associated with it as a volunteer, there's an event that is sponsored by the United States Department of Energy, and it's called the Solar Decathlon. I volunteered with it 3 years, or three times. I don't know how they're running now, but they used to have an event in D.C., Washington, D.C., every 2 years. And what it is, they're global now. what they would do is every 2 years, there would be anywhere from 19 to 21 colleges that were selected to come to Washington, D.C. on the monument, oh, excuse me, not on the monument, but on the Washington Mall. And they would set up a solar village. Now, this solar village was completely off the grid, or I should say, is off the grid. The decathlon is a contest. The solar decathlon is a contest among college students who are studying, you know, sustainability, renewable energy, electrical engineering, all, you know, all different type of business majors, accounting. It's a great project for the kids, college students. In any event, which is a contest, they build a solar village, and solar villages are off the grid. They do not tap into the local power companies. And when I'm talking about it, when I was associated with it, because then it got politicized. But I'm talking about the early days of the solar decathlon. I was in there 2007, 2009, 2011, the early days of it. And I think it first started in 2005. I didn't know about it then. But what's interesting, the very first one that they had, a short distance away, was the first Million Man March. But we'll have to do a whole separate podcast on the first Million Man March and the solar decathlon one day. Maybe we'll do it this week. But in any event, it's a contest. So these 19 to 21 colleges and universities, most of which are from the United States, but when I was in there volunteering, you had a team from China, you had a team from Germany, you had a team from France and probably Spain, you know, and the rest of them were American-based universities. And they would have to build a modern house, or they would have to build a house, which most of you would probably call modernized homes. And the houses would have to, all of them were off the grid, and they would have to be powered by the sun. Okay. Within each one of the houses, they had washing machines, appliances that you would find in the standard Western household. Washing machines, dryers probably in some of them. Whatever you find in your house, the appliances, they had them in these homes. And the homes had to function like regular homes on the grid, except they were all powered by solar energy. All right. And I think the first two events, and it was sponsored every 2 years. It still might be on that 2-year schedule. I haven't been associated with since like 2011. Because now they've taken it out of D.C., they've moved around the United States. Then you got solar decathlon India, solar decathlon Europe, solar decathlon China, solar decathlon Latin America. They're all over the place now. But their common denominator, okay, with these off-the-grid houses, and you were probably, and now, when I was associated with them, this is before tiny houses got on the radar, okay? And I would call, some of these people, I mean, I think a lot of people would call a lot of those homes tiny houses for the most part. For the most part. Borderline small, but most people might call them tiny houses. But the common, and the reason why, see, why I'm a big fan of solar, and solar's here, is because we're talking about the people, these are college students, and a good part of their workforce are putting together this solar village and building these 19 to 21 solar homes where college women, 18, 19, 21, 22 years old. These are the women, these college students, women, who shall be architects, engineers of some type, business people that are associated, you know, on how to get these things financed, building up communities. College, the 21-year-old college student at the Solar Decathlon today will be running or building or developing solar villages tomorrow in 2022. Matter of fact, probably some right now. And the common denominator between the Solar Decathlon lifestyles, the colonial and post-colonial presidential lifestyles, once again, there were 102 years that went by that there was no electricity that any president of the United States had. And the biblical lifestyles, because they were totally off the grid too. So we're talking about, and you have a lot of people going back to that. This past weekend, I watched, binge-watched, practically all weekend, videos. Now, we already know there are people living in their cars, voluntarily. I'm not talking about the ones that were forced to do that, but voluntarily. So you got people living in their cars. Matter of fact, a good number contacted me for an ad I'm running right now. So you got people living in their cars because they don't want to deal with municipalities, large municipalities at least. You have people living in their vans, families living in their vans, off the grid. You have people that have converted school buses, boxcars, cargo containers. I'm not talking about shipping containers, but cargo containers. People that have converted horse trailers. You have people out here that have bought, that have and are, or they're buying horse trailers and pimping those out into homes. And there's chic homes too. So that's what six, so I'm not even going to get into tiny houses and mobile homes and that type of thing. That six, there are probably no less than six different distinctions of housing out here that's off the grid. Even with the Solar Decathlon, you had some students. Now, once again, one of the barometers I look at of what your future is going to look like 15, 20, 30 years from now, what are women, what are young women doing? You know what? Hold on, I'm going to go back to 11 years old with Laura Nelson. Laura Nelson's 12 years old. And then you got a young lady that may be 18, 19, let's say 21 years old with the Solar Decathlon. That range. Those are the women that are going to decide what various significant parts of society will look like within the next 15 to 20 to 30 years. Laura Nelson, who's 12 years old, she got a camper, fixed it up with her parents and grandparents' help, but now she owns her own home. And she done pay $1,000 for it. In the last 3 weeks, I've had a lot of people that have done this. They're old enough to be Laura's grandparents, but they bought campers and trailers for $500, $1,000, $1,500, and that's where they're at. They don't want to deal with banks. They don't want to deal with any kind of government program. They don't want to deal with FHA, none of that. That's where, not only that's where the ball is going, that's where the ball is. You know, it depends on what social economic comfort zone you're peeking into. But now let's bring this up to the 21-year-old woman that's a part of the Solar Decathlon. The 21-year-old woman that's part of the Solar Decathlon community today is, number one, they're building aesthetically pleasing communities. Within those communities, they're building aesthetically pleasing housing. Now, the thing about the Solar Decathlon is that, because with these college students, they get a lot of sponsors because, you know, they got them, you know, they're building a house in one place. They might be building a house in California, and then they got to, when I was associated with it, then they had to transport it across the country to the, and all that, and you had students that were involved in the fundraising and all that. But what I'm saying is this. You've got a lot of people that are now, instead of spending all this money, is they have found ways to reduce the cost where there's a whole market of aesthetically pleasing European, it doesn't have to be European, it could be American too, but aesthetically pleasing homes that don't cost that might max out and cost at $10,000 to $15,000. A lot of them you can get for below $10,000. So with the Solar Decathlon is, and here's, it's a fascinating event because, when, like I said, when I was associated with it, 2007, 9, and 11, part of the rules was for these schools was, and I volunteered for every shift that they had. That's how I learned a whole lot about how this was set up. Like I say, now they got Solar Decathlon India, Solar Decathlon China. They've had Solar Decathlon Europe for a while. They got Solar Decathlon. They've added on some stuff since I've been associated with. But I'm attempting to model what I do after them. When they had it in Washington, D.C., on the Washington Mall, the mall is just basically a large park. It's a large park in Washington, D.C., okay. And people out there right now sitting in the park, walking, shooting the frisbee, or throwing the frisbee, some are having lunch. That's the Washington Mall, okay. And it's pretty large and extensive. I mean, at one end of it, you got the United States Capitol. At the other end of it, you got the Washington Monument. Okay, so it's pretty large. So when they set up this solar village of 19 to 21 homes, and the reason why I say 19 to 21, one year that I was at the Solar Decathlon, they had 19 homes. Another year, they had 21. So imagine, let's just narrow this down to a football field. Imagine a football field with nothing on it, including no goalposts. All right, so imagine 19 to 21 football fields, all right, with nothing on it but grass, all right? Primary rules of the Solar Decathlon is that you have to build this solar village with these, because this is all college students doing this stuff. You have to set up a solar village that's going to, and it ends up being a tourist attraction for the 21 days or 20, oh, it's not quite a month that it was on the Washington Mall or anywhere it's at around the world now. So let me fast forward. So you got a functioning solar village with its own infrastructure, its own roads, its own streets, okay, where you're driving, they drive golf carts with at least one hour. They probably still do. They drive golf carts, electric vehicles. They built their own infrastructure as far as the streets on it. They had a central unit. The first time I laid solar panels was in 2007 via the Solar Decathlon. Wore me out because those were some big-ass heavy panels. And they have their own lights, solar lights for at night, you know, street lights. Okay? It was actually a real village. Just ran on solar. But it had its streets and all that. Okay? I'll tell you what the streets were made out of. They didn't use concrete or nothing like that. And it had to look like and function. Now, the end of the event, after the competition was over with, then they would have to deconstruct, the college students would have to deconstruct their homes and the infrastructure for streets that they contributed to the solar village of the Solar Decathlon. And it couldn't leave any indication that there was ever a village there. I was an eyewitness of that three times. Because I was all, they would break out like it's October now. This is Solar Decathlon month. Matter of fact, this is solar month. Because the first weekend in September, Solar Today magazine has a solar tour of homes, which is basically regular homes of regular people who've gone solar. All right. But getting back to the Solar Decathlon. So they were like October 1st. Like at 12:01 October 1st, that's when they were allowed, or whatever date it was. They had to, that was when they were allowed to move their entourage, their solar entourage from these different universities, like I say, most of them from the United States, but the years I was there, you had Germany. Matter of fact, Germany won the first 2 years. Universität Darmstadt in Germany, they won the first 2 years I was there. You know, after that, they couldn't, I mean, the Germans, it's kind of hard to beat them when it comes to sustainability because that's the way they just live on a regular. But in any event, so 12 minutes after one, so I would get there around about 6:30, maybe 7:30 at the morning in the latest. And it would be amazing to see how much construction that these people did within 6 hours worth of time. They probably had the whole village set up basically within 24 hours. Totally amazing. And they would take it down. I participated in the takedown process just once. Because the first year, I mean, I watched the second two times. But the first year, you know, once again, I helped lay solar panels for the central unit of solar for the, you know, for the lights, the village lights and all that, the first year, and also helped take them down and learn that process. But it was like a gym. Those solar panels were just real heavy. Anyway, so those villages, okay, they're going to be, they are popping up around the globe. Because once again, the barometer, the metric that I use is the women that you see, the college students, the female college students that you see involved with these projects, they're the ones that are going to be developing these villages in real life. Now you got college, and the first Soul of the Carolina, I think, was in 2005. I volunteered 2007, 2009, 2011. That's the last one I was involved with. And some of these people, as I'm looking at women, I mean, just even now, man, if you take a married couple or a couple that's living together, basically the house is the woman. The woman could be a housewife and not even work. But if the woman's not happy, if the woman doesn't want to live in this neighborhood and this community, it's not going to happen. This is overall, I mean, there are exceptions, but overall, if the woman does not want to live in Podunk, Iowa, it ain't happening. And even if she wants to live in Podunk, Iowa, okay, then it's got to be in the right neighborhood, in a house that she likes, and she's got the house going to be decorated the way that she likes, and at the end of the day, the man will get a chair. Granted, there are exceptions, but overall, the man, old school, like in my parents' day, my stepfather, he had a chair. The rest of the house was my mother's. Nowadays, the house is still a woman's house, and a man, if you don't have a chair, now we've updated it, the man can have a man cave. And later on, the wife might even invade that if he doesn't build her own she shed. That's the way people are rolling today. Another barometer is, you know, a lot of these women out here, because one of the people I've had on here twice, Crystal Vanner, black woman, pretty sharp. She lives in the van. I mean, I think she was married twice or something like that. But a lot of women, you know what? I'll make it on my own. If I got to convert a van, if I got to pimp out my car and live in it, if I got to buy a horse trailer, you have women, including some black women now in the United States, that have converted pimped out horse trailers where now there's chic homes. So you might not visibly see a critical mass of people running out of Los Angeles or New York City or Boston, Massachusetts into these extreme homes, but it is happening. And it has been happening for some time, and it's going on around the globe. I got a friend of mine that lives in Maritime Southeast Asia. She just built her house this year during the pandemic. She built the house that she wanted for $2,000. And it's not a shack. She didn't want to be involved with a mortgage. So tying this all together. Now, this is, once again, Soul of the Carathon is modern. We're talking about right now, 2022 and beyond. These college students, who I now call missionaries, and I'm one of them. I was a volunteer when I was involved with it. Okay, and I volunteered for the marketing part. I mean, I volunteered for all kind of jobs, laying solar panels for the infrastructure. Oh, the roads for these places. Is they had their roads were made of a special type of rubberized mats or whatever that you can drive a car, truck, or over or whatever it was. But they used those, and that served as the streets, the drivable streets, where you can drive a truck over on an electric vehicle, a car, you can, the sidewalks and all that, those are made from those mats. And it was all nice and neat and clean, and once again, aesthetically pleasing. Once again, the Soul of the Decathlon is a contest. I actually like to put something like this together for kids. 12th grade in that range. But the Soul of the Decathlon is for college students. And they've got a variety of students that make this thing go. They have students that are studying renewable energy. And you know what? When I started with it in 2007, or when I was with it in 2007, there was no such major as renewable energy in the United States. There might be now, but there wasn't in 2007. They had some STEM students. They had architectural students. They also had quite a few business students because a lot of the matter of fact, all of the solar panels, all of the building materials, the transporting it from the university to Washington, D.C. at the time, from as far away from China, France, Germany, Spain, different California, Vermont, when these students came in, that cost a lot of money. The materials cost a lot of money. To get the university students to Washington, D.C. for this event, the bill's high for each school. So they had business students involved, which each one of the schools, and they would have to put they'd have to raise the money. So they would take their college studies, whatever their major might be, Masters of Business Administration, Finance majors, Accounting majors, they married them all together. And like I said, the metric I go by with most things are women. These 21-year-old women, these 18, 19, 21-year-old women that are all involved with this, that's how segments of society around the globe are going to implement this. So let me tie this in. The Solar Decathlon lifestyles, the presidential lifestyles, the colonial, post-colonial presidential lifestyles in the United States, along with the biblical lifestyles, Moses, Jesus, Joshua, all those dudes, is the common denominator is off the grid. Off the grid. I'm not saying there's going to be a mad exodus. Because right now in 2021, and in a couple of months it'll be 2022, or 2.5 months it'll be 2022, is that particularly for the people in 2022, you have people right now that it's sort of like a quiet revolt or a quiet revolution of people consciously saying, you know what, I don't want to live in a municipality, not a large one. I might want to work in one or visit friends, but I don't want an electric bill. I don't want a municipal water bill. I don't want to pay property taxes. And once again, on YouTube, you got a lot of never-ending videos on people who have dropped off the grid and have been staying off the grid and doing it legally. You have... if you go online and you look up, there's a magazine, I forgot the name of it. Look, put in, let me try to find it now. Where's my phone? Okay. There's, and I got a live stream to do later today. Let's see, another live stream. Here, type in any search engine, intentional... intentional community magazines. Let me see. Because you've got a bunch of people globally, including, okay, here it is. Look up Communities Magazine. Or put intentional, let me see, intentional communities. Communities Magazine. So you've got people out here that are, yeah, look up Communities Magazine and also type in Intentional Communities Magazine and open those up, and there's a number of communities that have been established, and there are new ones all the time that are being established. A lot of them, they look different, but more and more you're going to see what I would see, I would call solar villages that pop up. And a lot of these are going to, are in rural areas. Now, as far as this happening in major cities in the United States, here's what I see going, because I'm looking 30 years into the future on this. The politicians, the businesses that bankroll politicians, the ones who write the policy for code enforcement, man being man and change being change, because everything changes. I think in 30 years from now, I think we'll start seeing some parts of major urban cities that have outlawed or banned or have prevented people from dropping off the grid within their cities. I think that's going to change within 30 years. Because the students that are at the solar decathlon today are going to be the code enforcement people, the legislators, the politicians of tomorrow. Particularly the ones who, and there might be some political science majors in this too, involved with the solar decathlon as students. Because four or five years ago, code enforcement in Los Angeles, California, got rid of people that had some solar tiny houses. I'm not even going to go solar, tiny houses. Now, the city of Los Angeles has opened up their first tiny house village. That's one thing that a lot of these students have found. See, a lot of these students have found out the political part of this. If you find a way where the local government gets their cut first, then it, you know that's the first step, and you know they're working on it. So the city of Los Angeles has a solar, or not a solar village, but they have a tiny village. Sooner or later, a lot of those little tiny houses that are like 64 square feet, they have solar panels on them, and then it'll become a solar village. But that's just what's happened within the last 5 years within Los Angeles, California, overregulated, in my opinion. Tiny houses to live in is illegal. However, they have an exhibit in Washington, D.C. of tiny houses in the Adams Morgan section of D.C. No, Mount Pleasant section of D.C. that are on display. Sort of like a tourist attraction. But you know what? That's the baby step, because there are people in Washington, D.C. I used to be a member of some of these groups as a volunteer, because I saw how much politics what goes into this, too. But you got law students. You got law students that are working on this. So, but in some places within the United States, you know, like for instance, if you wanted to open up from scratch a mobile home community. That's kind of a hard one. That's a very hard bar, high bar to get into from scratch in the United States now. But once again, this is where I'm saying with the soul of the cast line, a lot of these kids are looking back in history. And they're looking at, you know what? You can do a whole... Here's the difference between the soul of the cap. The only primary difference is this. The soul of the cap on kids of today, or students of today, as opposed to the biblical lifestyles, is they have power. Some of the houses with the soul of the cap line have what they call edible lawns. Now, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, today, edible lawns are illegal. Let me correct that. Edible front lawns are illegal. You can grow food in the backyard in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in your front yard, edible lawns are illegal. So is the calf lawn. At every one of those events, at least one or two of those schools have edible lawns. I'm going in increments of five. Every 5 years or so, you're going to see more and more communities pop up, phases of dropping off the municipal power grid as we know it right now. And I'm talking about in your larger cities. Meanwhile, with your intentional communities, you have people that are, with intentional communities, basically you can do what you want to do to a very high degree. To a very high degree. It all depends on, you know, on the community. Like, certain things I can and can't do with my 4 acres in Hamilton County, Florida, whereas the 10 acres that I have in Texas, particularly in that part of Texas, what can't I do? And whatnot. But so we'll report on this, you know, more often. But more and more people are looking at, like, say, looking at the figures here. Because what this nation has become, in my opinion, we've really come hyper addicted to comfort, convenience, and reliance on others in the last 100 or so years. Once again, let me give you the dates, based so I can sort of tie this stuff in. George Washington was went in office April 30th, 1789. The White House didn't have any electricity until 1891. That's a span of 102 years. That's 102 years that people got wealthy, people got rich, People got along, but no electric bill. All right. Now they're plug-and-play systems that you can put together with solar and solar generators that are for, hell, you can buy them on Amazon now. You can have the modern convenience of electricity and not receive an electric bill, not even be tied into the electric company at all. Now, in some places, once again, you have to look at your place. At some places, you have to, your home has to be hooked up to the local power grids. Like in some places, like for instance, I don't know how many, I see it once or twice a year. They say, water, you can't be off the grid with water in the state of, man, I'm in Florida. I live in Florida. Now, this house was, this house is like 30, man, I don't know, 35 years old, something, 36 years old, something like that. It's less than 40 years old, I think. Is connected to the municipal water system. But about 30 years ago, I wasn't here, but my mother and stepfather were. They got off the grid with water. So I have as much water as I can use here every day. So do my next door neighbors. Well, hold it. I got one next door neighbor that's connected to the water grid. I'm disconnected from the main water grid because I have a well here. And when you're, but then that's the way they roll in this part of, in this part of Florida, you got an option. You got municipal water if you want it, or you can be responsible for your own water. You can dig a well, but you're responsible for, you know, filtering. I got a reverse osmosis system on my thing. So I got it like that. My next door, one of my immediate next door neighbors has it. Then I got another neighbor to the, the right of me. He's on the grid though. But then across the street, I got two more neighbors, county corner to me, that are both on wells. And then one has a double system. We're allowed to collect rainwater as well as groundwater here. That's where I'm at. Now, in Washington, D.C., I can't do that. They're not going to let me do a well. All right. But if you look in the Intentional Communities magazine, you can see around the United States as well as around the globe, there are a lot of communities. There are a lot of communities in the United States that these are new communities. Some have been around for a while. That they've had it with, you know, large municipalities. Some have been able to, several hundreds have been able to find communities not far from a large municipality. So they might live in this one place, and they'll go to work. You know, they'll drive 30 minutes or 45 minutes an hour, you know, to a large municipality, go to work or do whatever they want to do, and then go back home. But going back to my figures, okay, so there was 102 years between 1789 until the White House first got electrified, which is 1891. That's 102 years. And that's between George Washington President Benjamin Harris. So that's there were 21 presidents. I'm still going to make it 22. There were 22 because Harrison didn't have it when he first got in. 22 American presidents that did not experience electricity as we know it today. That's 22 people who lived in countries or in this country or what we now call the United States that didn't have electricity. They got along just fine. Now you got electricity, but you don't have to get it from a singular power source. if we go from the Declaration of Independence, July 4th, 1776, between that time, that's 115 years. If we go back to Ponce de Leon, first European settlement, 1521, that's 370 years without it. So what a lot of these college students are doing, these, and once again, I'm looking at the collegiate female that is an architecture student, to a business major that's gotten, you know, involved with the Soul of the Decathlon thing. And now with the advent, we're all wired. Matter of fact, let me look at. We're all wired. We're traveling more. So, I mean, how I got into this whole thing is I was on a trip, my first trip to Europe. I never saw windmills before that. This is in the early 2000s. I never saw windmills before that. When I went to the toilet, I used a dual flush toilet. You know, one button for liquids, the smaller button for liquids, the larger button for solids. For me, that was part of my culture shock. And I got used to that pretty quick. I never saw a tankless hot water heater till I went to Europe. I never saw a compost bin in everybody's backyard until I went to Germany for the first time, because that's where I was living for several months out of the year. Soul of Decathlon, let me see, I'm going to the international. Okay. Now, mind you, once again, when I was with it as a volunteer, it was held in Washington, D.C. only once every 2 years. Now they have expanded to Soul of Decathlon Africa, Soul of Decathlon China, Soul of Decathlon Europe, Soul of Decathlon India, Soul of Decathlon Latin America and Caribbean, and Soul of Decathlon Middle East. The young ladies that are 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 are architectural majors, business administration majors, finance majors, renewable energy majors, sustainability majors. You can probably throw some STEM up there in some kind of way. Agricultural majors. Don't forget, edible lawns. Those 18 to 22-year-old women that are in various universities since 2005 here in the United States. I think Tuskegee was in one of the first ones. Because HBCUs need to put on some kind of event just like this. But now you got young women, Soul of Decathlon, Africa. That's where the ball is. Now, I'm thinking, once again, I'm thinking in five-year increments. Because, once again, men being men, women decide where us men are going to live. They're exceptions. We do the heavy lifting. We do the heavy lifting. But if our woman, if she's not going to live in this neighborhood or this town in this particular house, and it's not the house is not fixed up the way she it. Well, you know us men. Will everything become solar? No. But when we say solar now, we're talking about off the grid. Because with the solar decathlon, there are no there are no water bills. Now what has happened in the last year that I was associated with it, because it didn't become fun after that. What happened is in 2007 to 2009, particularly 2007, my very first time, that was when it was most fun. Not because it was my first time. It's because, you know, after the local utility companies, Pepco, which is the electric company for Washington, D.C., it's the monopolized electric company for Washington, D.C., and part of the D.C. metro area, and Washington Gas, then they got in on the act as sponsors. Because they're looking at, and I got to give them credit for being smart and forward-looking, and forward-thinking. They got involved on that because they saw, you know what? Once again, these women, 18 to 22, that are majoring in sustainability and renewable energy and buying solar panels and growing fruits and vegetables and front lawns around the look at Washington, D.C. now. This uses as a barometer and a metric of what's happening, which will be coming to a neighborhood near you in the United States. You got George Washington University. You got Georgetown University. You got Southeastern University. You got Catholic University. Outside the city, you've got the University of Maryland College Park. You got George Mason University. You got a bunch of some community colleges: Montgomery College, Rockville, Montgomery College, Montgomery Community College, Rockville, Gaithersburg, and Tacoma Park, Silver Spring campuses. You got Northern Virginia Community Colleges. You have women, young ladies, 18 to 22, thereabouts, that they're participating in this event. These are future consumers. In a few short years, if it hasn't happened already, these women are having children. They're getting married and they're having children. Even if they don't get married, they're having children. They're having families. They have seen the light on the Washington Mall. Now it's around the globe. They've seen the light. I don't have to pay an electric bill, I don't have to pay a municipal water bill, I don't have to pay a municipal natural gas bill. I can heat my home, I can electrify my height, I can watch my flat screen TV totally off the grid in an aesthetically pleasing house that I put together. The mustard seed was first started planted in 2005. Manhattan's not going to look like it will now, 5 years from now. Robin brought up something interesting last week. And here's just another indicator going back in the time machine. Because then basically things just boom around back to the future. A lot of places where they can, you know, the freeways where they knock down the houses that, you know, the nearly full of peace that I play occasionally, they knock down those houses around the freeway. Well, now you got a lot of people that have set up tent cities around these freeways. Well, in Mongolia right now in 2021, anywhere from 30 to 40% of the people that live in the capital city of, I think it's Ulaanbaatar, I might be butchering that name, Mongolia, their capital city, 30 to 40% of the population of their capital city live in yurts. A yurt's nothing but a glorified tent. But culturally, Mongolia has always been a nomadic society. And they've had yurts there for thousands of years. And other parts of Central Asia. Although that's more of Eastern Asia. But here in the United States, you know, this is a tent city in Tampa, Florida, about 45 minutes away from me right now. I've had, matter of fact, I've got to respond to, I've had people call me, I had people with jobs that are living in cars. And this is just off an ad I have. I re-ran it, the ad again, backyard. People that got their own tents. They have jobs. But you know, and I had to bring Kelly Harden back on here. She's having the mobile homes. But she'll tell you herself, statements along with Pleasant Stevens. Kelly says, and I agree with Kelly, the single family house isn't as attractive as it used to be. Jesus, wait a minute. All right, people, I got to take this call. I'll be back.
It was almost 2 years ago that I started work on a small log cabin in the northern Canadian bush. And it has been exactly a year since I closed the cabin door for the last time and moved away. Finally, I got the chance to return, and I am anxious to see how the cabin has fared the last four seasons on its own. While most parts of North America are enjoying mild spring weather with no snow, my aluminum snowshoes are falling through waist-deep powder and temperatures of minus 20 degrees Celsius. Although this looks like January weather, would you believe that this is late April? It's been a long, hard winter here. Lots of snow and a solid month of minus 40 degree temperatures. There were even a few days that registered right around minus 50. It seems that the lynx population has been hit the hardest this winter. Several locals have reported that their dogs have been attacked by lynx along the hiking trails. Normally, lynx avoid this sort of contact with bigger dogs and humans, but the prolonged cold temperatures have forced them to make desperate decisions.
Okay, I had to take a call from a person in a larger municipality. Anyway, I lost my whole train of thought. Anyway, so... Okay. Anyway, I know I was going with the tents. So, I've had a lot of calls from people that have tents. They've got jobs. They got reliable transportation. There's a lot of people that are contacting me on, you know, can I park my camper there? Can I park my trailer there? So a lot of people are basically being forced off of the grid in your larger municipalities, and going back at it, matter of fact, if we look at the history of mankind from biblical days to colonial presidents to post-colonial presidents, we're looking at to Soul of the Castron kids, A lot of people dropping off. Will all people drop off? No. Because they are addicted to the comfort and conveniences of the monopolized power grids that are in some of your large cities. So, but I tell you what could happen with some places, and we'll come back and we'll take phone calls right after this.
Because I used to observe that a lot of little shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do. And,
but we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be, super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with them.
What's his name? Neely Fuller. Part of his message is dated because, I just got a text here. Now, this is from a woman. Now, mind you, I just advertised a backyard for rent. Okay. This lady, anyway, she says, I'm looking for a place for a tiny home near the amenities, if possible, with good neighbors, an awesome landlord, needs Wi-Fi, I work and go to school online. Is that available? All right. So I got it available in three locations, but I'm only concentrating on one for today. I got to hire somebody to even handle this stuff. But now, I'm saying that to say this. Once again, this is from a woman. And it's the women that, the men might be up front as far as the politicians. Well, you got women politicians now that are very, very visible and very involved. On the home front, I'm looking at these are the metrics. These are the metrics. This is a woman, and I don't even know her. I know this about her, because she used it in her text to me just now. She used the word tiny house. So number one, I know, and I don't even know how old she is. Okay, but number one, it's a good chance. It's a 50-50 chance that she built her tiny house. Now she's got a 450 square foot tiny house. I call that a small house, but she calls it a tiny house. But there's no formal definition of a tiny house right now anyway. But obviously it's on wheels because she's looking for a place to park it. Okay. I already know that she lives an off-the-grid lifestyle. I already know that she, in her new, she said, you know, she needs Wi-Fi. I got that. All right. I already know that she knows about solar, because she's probably got all that equipped with her. Like, I don't know how old this woman is, but once again, women, to a large degree, I use them as one of my primary metrics. What are women, particularly young women, or even females, not even, I go as low as 11 or 12. If they pop up on YouTube, I look at that. Show me a 13 or 15, once, just like one of my favorite YouTubers, she might be 19 years old now. Marie TV, M-A-R-E-E TV. I played a couple of her things on there. Black woman. She got pregnant at, 15? And she went out with the help of her mother or parents, bought a shed from wherever you buy sheds from, put it in the backyard, everything legal, and converted the shed into a tiny house. Her son may be 3 years old now. And here's a young lady that, if you don't know the backstory I just gave you, with, you know, actively participating in converting her shed into a tiny house. How many 15-year-olds who get pregnant and they end up at the social services office? Once again, that's why I use women as a metric. If you want to see tomorrow, look at what the youngins are doing today. And if you follow their track, you can get ahead of the game and catch a lot of those dollars, which that's a whole different podcast on that. But anyway, that's my take on biblical lifestyles, colonial presidential lifestyles dating back 102 years, and solar decathlon lifestyles. Is they're all off the grid, but with the solar decathlon lifestyles, like I said, this text that I just got, I've gotten at least five during this podcast, not including the one that I got from the on-the-grid project that I got up north. But I'm using my off-the-grid projects to cancel out whatever I have on the grid. Anyway, that's my take on it. Solar's here. It ain't going nowhere. It might not be everywhere, but little bit by little bit, that's why I said, look at Intentional Communities magazine, and like I said, I'm getting them on. And you know what? I haven't advertised, and none of my advertisers, the one I got going on right now for just a backyard, We're going overtime, folks, as we usually do. I haven't advertised anything about solar, renewable energy, haven't mentioned the term off the grid, nothing. But this woman that just sent me, and she's not the only one. I've had some men, you know, these people already know about off the grid. These people already know about solar. They already know about it. Some are in their 60s or 70s. They're already there. So I don't have to educate them or sell them on anything. It's, you know, what's available. You know, I got to do a live stream at in about 3 more hours. I'm going to do it as a test run, but we're getting ready to ramp things up here where we'll have to do stuff daily anyway, but that's a whole nother proper thing. Excuse me. We got more than 10 seconds, 314. Good morning. Well, it's afternoon here now.
L.A.
Yes,
what's
sir.
Going on, man? I got a new phone. I don't know how to use this sucker.
I don't know. I know I got to call you back.
I'm going to get me another one. I want a Samsung something, but I seen the Samsung 2021.
Ooh, I don't have that. I got a Samsung Note 8, but I got to put a new battery in it. Yeah, I love
like
Samsung.
That. And they got some other ones, El Mini, that's supposed to be just as good as the Samsung in certain categories like battery life.
Mm-hmm.
But they got one that's, you probably know about it.
I love Samsung laptops. I got one of those I'm on right now. I love Samsung phone. I got to get a new battery for it. And speaking of which, I got you on the phone, and we're speaking about metrics, particularly when it comes to women in housing. Something
mm-hmm.
that you've mentioned to me twice, and I'm aware of it, and I got to get my hands on one. The foldable house. I see
and
more people get into that.
You can get into that. I told you, give me a call. We can talk about your place that you're talking about doing something to. The Samsung 2021 Ultra is the one I'm talking about.
That costs how much they charge for that one? About $1,200?
$1,100 or $1,200.
Okay.
You can,
but you know what?
Call,
that's a good.
Hmm?
All right, Pianchi, I'm going to tell you what. Let me call you around about 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock your time today. Is that good for you?
Yeah, if I can figure out how to answer the damn phone on this thing.
It just should be a button on the side of the phone, unless they done put it on another part of the phone. All right, I got an LG in my hand, and to cut this LG on, there's a button in the back of the phone. But on my Samsung, the button is on the right-hand side.
Mine's got some buttons over there, and I figured out one is for two. At the top is for increasing the volume and lowering the volume, so I figured that much out.
All right, that's usually on the left-hand side.
Yeah, mine is on the right-hand side, so I figured it out. But no, that's a good idea. Getting back to your topic, and you know, you said something strange that I'm gonna have to make a comment about the electricity in the White House. You mean to tell me that slaves built the White House, didn't put no electricity in it?
Now, Bianca, I didn't say all that. Now, I didn't say all that.
See, here's the thing. Africans don't have electricity over there on the continent now.
Well, that's true.
80% of the places.
Well, I haven't been over there yet. You've been over there a few times, so you got a big jump on me in that. But from the friends I know over there, where they have power outages or they have a generator, or you're absolutely right. But no, I didn't say all that.
Asked the question. I hear people say this. I even heard Michelle Obama say, "Slaves built the White House." Well, they worked on the White House. They didn't build it, but if they did build it, you wouldn't give them that much credit. Why in the hell they didn't put electricity in it? But anyway, let's go back to what you was talking about. You making reference to the 18-year-old, I think you said. It's got a tiny house.
As a barometer for looking into the future.
Yeah, if people want to do those things. But, you know, it's going to be certain people that does that, which is nothing wrong with it. I used to like to go camping. I don't do it as much as I did then. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of fun to go out there and don't have to. Of course, we didn't have. Some people, some scoutmasters make their scouts leave their cell phones at home. So you can be completely detached.
Well, you know what? I think they should. I think they should, man. They get away for a weekend, just a weekend. That's only two nights or 2 days. Get away and you just get that camaraderie of being around other people. You know, without the phone ringing and I got to take this call and all that. No. Yeah, I agree, man. Leave those phones at home.
Yeah, and the one, I like the YouTube clips on the guy that built his cabin out there in the wilderness. That man is something else, man. That's some hard work doing that. He even split his logs.
Well, you can't be a weakling if you're going to get out and do, I mean, that's some hardcore physical activity. How old is your grandson again, the one I spoke to?
He's 23 years old, 1997.
We can throw in the men as well. Yeah. Young men that age, if you talk to them, well, you already know this, I'm preaching to the choir. If you talk to those people, if you want to look into the future, that's who you talk to.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something, Emily. I bet you agree. See, there's so much to learn nowadays. So you're going to either have to do one or two things. You're going to have to cut out a lot of the things that go back so far. In other words, when people were going to school in the 1950s, they could afford to study stuff in the mid-1800s. But you can't do that today because you got so much stuff to learn about so many things and options today than you did back at that time.
That's true.
And people were doing it back in the 50s and making records and recordings with a typewriter. Well, today you have word processors on your computer. Now you got these handheld devices called cell phones, and you still don't have enough time. You ever found yourself saying that I'm going to get to it, something that you would do on your computer, like with a word process? Well, apparently you don't have enough time, even though the convenience that apparatus and technology affords you still don't have enough time.
Well, that's true, because depending on the person, because I know I'm very guilty of what you just said, because you get distracted. You might look at, if you're in the house, if you look at something on Facebook, you get caught up with that. If you get on YouTube, you get caught up with that. Or if you got to do daily errands, you know, you got to really, nowadays I'm looking at, you really got to prioritize.
Well, just going to school, for instance, and taking the subjects that you need to have. Now, that's a college age. But going back when you are in preschool, going into kindergarten, there are things that you need to expose your child to that don't afford them the time that they waste. We see too much often of today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just going through the process of seeing if they have the inner ability towards leading them in a direction towards some profession.
Right.
Because if you're going to be a profession, you're not hearing people talking about and complaining that doctors don't treat black women like they treat white women. And I asked the person, you know, I replied, I said, why don't you create your own doctors? And I said, black students overrepresented in low-paying majors, meaning that they are not taking up any med courses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, taking up med courses require what? A lot of study.
A lot of study.
Different areas.
You don't have no medical school, any type of engineering school, you're not going to have a social life.
And guess what? You cannot work to do it efficiently. Here's the thing. You need to carry as many credits toward your total credits needed so that you can come out of there either in 4 years or before. I knew a black lady woman. I can't think of her name.
Oh, you talking about some undergraduate courses?
For your bachelor's degree.
Yeah, your
bachelor's degree.
Like
engineering, for instance.
Right.
I knew a woman that came out of the University of Missouri, Rolla, and her petroleum engineer, and she'd done it. Now, she's a black lady. She'd done it in 3 years. But she had because it takes about 130 credit hours.
She must have gone to school on top of that. Did she go to school year
round?
She
done a lot of things.
Okay.
I don't know, but she done it in 3 years. She's the first that ever done it in 3 years. I don't know if based on her phenotype or what, but I know that that accomplishment stands with her. Now, that's what I'm saying. If you're going to do something major, then, and really it's the major things that's going to be existing in the future. A lot of these mediocre things that people get involved with, like accounting and like receptionists, medical reception, those jobs are going to be gone.
Yeah, you got robots coming. Well, you know, speaking of which, let me ask you this, and anybody who's listening. Okay, you got the STEM majors, and then one, matter of fact, two metrics that I look at, very important that particularly if young kids don't jump on the bandwagon, and I'm even going to throw out something social too, social political, reparations. During the pandemic, we've had three events that are going to inspire a lot of youngins to major in the STEM majors in college. And the events were when Sir Richard Branson launched his Virgin Galactic and went into space, then Jeff Bezos twice this year, his blue, I forgot the name of his thing. He's gone into space. He went last week with William Shatner, who played Captain Kirk Star Trek. And they're selling tickets for other, you know, people that want to go out into space. And you know that you already know people that will be planning retreats and space stations and all this stuff, and a lot of this is going to, you know, people are going to get into the STEM profession, I mean, majors and all this. My question to you and anybody listening, because you're going to have a lot of people inspired by that, I think the demand will go that way, particularly for black folk, and things like reparations will die out, or people trying to get reparations will try to die out. What's your thoughts on that? I'm for the people going up in space. I think that's where the ball is going.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, by the way, I want to tell you, Colin Powell passed away. He was fully vaccinated.
Yeah, I read that this
too.
Morning. Yeah, I read that this morning. That was
fully vaccinated.
Yeah, I heard
and
about
passed
that.
Away from COVID.
Well,
and
COVID
that there,
it's not a silver bullet.
That there in itself. Now you can understand why people reject these vaccinations.
Right.
Absolutely, because what folks told you early on in the discussion is now being retracted and changed, or no comments.
Right.
But getting back to what you said, you're absolutely right. Those that are trained and skilled in the higher paying for professions is not going to be asking for that.
Mm-mm.
Not in that form. See, if I wanted to receive reparation, and this already exists, I would be getting involved in things that would eliminate me from having to pay tariffs on imports. Just like all those container ships that's falsely being held offshore, that's
uh-huh.
political. Those ships, when they come in, depending on what they have to pay tariffs
okay.
on that merchandise. So it's got to be cleared by a custom broker. And a custom broker has to clear with the Customs and Border Protection, U.S. Customs, any tariffs that's due. I had custom brokers come to my house one time because I had a shipment of gold coming from Africa. They wanted
mm-hmm.
to know what it was, because when you fill out the weigh bill and you fill out the portion that is supposed to go to U.S. Customs, you got to indicate a commodity code, and that commodity code either is subjected to tariffs or it's not. Well, I entered a commodity code that applied to what was being received, and they just wanted to check for, just general routine checking. I got a friend of mine that does his own pharmaceutical manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
Alvin, and he ordered an encapsulating machine from China.
Okay.
And it came, and they questioned him about what he ordered and had shipped to his place. And one of the reasons why is because people that make illicit drugs also invest in those type of equipment for their process. So once he, once they found out what he was doing, everything was cool. Because when you're doing your own pharmaceuticals, your facility has to be inspected and signed off on. In other words, you just can't
mm-hmm.
start in your kitchen table making pharmaceuticals. The room has to meet certain specifications as far as the material on the floor. It has to
right.
meet certain specifications as far as the your ventilation and temperature. You have to have your door lock system, your airlock system. In other words, you come through one door, that door closes, then you open another door to go into the lab. So all those things.
Right.
But I helped him put his doors in and invested in his ventilation system, which is pretty
mm.
cool.
Well.
So all those things like that does make a, that's what you want that's what your reparations is about, being able to bring back into the country, like the AGOA Act, African Growth and Opportunity Act, and there's some that also apply to other nations, bring back into the United States, duty and tariffs free.
That's a conversation I haven't heard any pro-reparations people talk about.
Yeah, and if you get money, and if you're not producing, the money's going to go. Where do you expect it's going to do? Grow like cabbage?
That's part of the lease reparations discussions I've heard. A lot of them don't approach that aspect of it. It's most of them that I've heard, which is I haven't heard everything. Nobody has. They're talking about gimme, but nobody's talking about what would they do. What manufacturing, and none of them talk about that. What would they do with the money?
Well, I listen to those conversations, and there's rebuttals to those conversations that people who's on the listening end don't use. So what they let me know, that they know that the people that's presenting them with this information don't really know what the hell they're talking about. So you just let them talk. Every time you meet with them, you just let them talk. They talk, and nothing happens. It's just like you coming up to me and you point a gun at me. And you say, Pionk, I'm going to shoot you. And I know that the gun barrel is welded with a block in it. Well, a bullet could come out of it if you wanted to. So what I do is just listen to you. And even to some point, agree with you so that you don't find out that the gun you are planning to shoot me with don't work anyway.
Man, that's a smart way to do it. I've had to handle, I haven't had to do it in years, but some tenants in the past. I just let them blow off steam, and I don't say anything.
That's right. That's what you do. Don't say a damn thing. Because they already done made up their mind, and they made up their mind based on no uncircumstantial facts. So just let them keep on talking. They're going to talk. Now, you getting back to your home and the water, I don't know. I guess you got water on your place there in the 4 acres?
No, we haven't put a, we haven't put a well up there yet.
But you got pressurized water coming down that road, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
I haven't asked, but I'm assuming what they do have is if you want to tap into the electrical grid, they do have the poles up, that part of it already out there.
Yeah, that there is going to be feasible, but you're going to have to pay for it probably. And you got a water main that runs down that main road to the top of you, to the top of the map, which would be north, if they laid it out like that. And that's pressurized water, that's sanitized, treated water that's coming from the municipality, right?
You know, I'm going to call up today and ask about that. Because in that neck of the woods, man, a lot of people, they might have that, but because like where I'm at is really, yeah, I don't know, it's kind of weird where I'm at. It's a combination of, it looks like a suburban, what do you call it, the subdivision, but right across the street.
I'm going to tell you something.
Directly across the street from me.
Yeah, that's one way to do it. I know a lady, a black woman in America who was in Ghana, and she wanted to bring water to her house. And they must have laid a copper pipe. I know every good bit of 600 feet down the road, which is really kind of stupid. Because anybody come along and dig that up and your copper pipe is cut. I don't even know if it was copper. I don't even remember. But that's one way to do it, but it's kind of an awkward way to do it. Hey, if I was to do something like that, I would make a come off that pipe in the road, the main road, and come in and form a manifold.
Okay.
After you get on your property, which would be a manifold that runs, that's laid parallel with the road, and then let people, if they want to, tie into that by a plumber that's going to let anybody go out there and do it. And they could have, it would be metered.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have to pay for it, then go like that.
Yeah, that's an option. Certainly is. Anyway, I got to track down Robin. I don't know where she is today. I heard from her yesterday, but I don't know where she is. Oh, but then again, it's just 3 hours behind here. All right, Pionk.
All right, I'll talk to you later, man.
I'll give you a call between 5:30 and 6 your time.
I'll be waiting.
Okay. All right. On that note, people, everyone have a good rest of the day.